We're recording now. Not video,
Hey,
though. Just audio. Hi.
And welcome to day 12.
Okay, if you do that, then people are going to wonder what happened to day 1 through 11.
Oh, so, get out, eh?
Now you're dating us even worse. I mean, it's bad enough we're saying AD&D. I'm sure people realize that SCTV reference kits, but... Hi, everybody. My name's Michael Dorland.
And my name is Richard Dodson.
We are here to talk about a new website, and what do they call it? A community of practice that we're trying to develop called Play AD&D with ADHD. I'm not sure why we called it that. Why did we call it that, Richard?
Because we needed more acronyms in our life.
I hate acronyms and everything. Unfortunately, I found out the other day, talking to a lot of young people, that they actually didn't understand what AD&D meant, which one, brought a tear to my eye, and two, means that we need to explain what AD&D means. Richard, you want to talk a little bit about what AD&D is first off?
Sure. So I think nowadays they've gone back to the original D&D, which people might be a little more familiar with, but it stands for AD&D stands for Advanced Dungeons and Dragons, which is a role-playing game. If you haven't heard of Dungeons and Dragons, it's like the role-playing game, the prototype that grew into the hobby that we know and love today. It was a outgrowth of the old wargaming hobby where you'd have armies on the battlefield and you'd move them around based off of the rules of the particular war game that you were playing. But instead of dealing at the unit level or even the platoon level or even the squad level, you're down to individual characters. And you, as the player of the character, which is where the PC or player character comes from, then you have control over what they do. So if you're on a battlefield, instead of the commander rolling some kind of morale check to see if your squad holds, and you can decide as an individual character whether or not you're going to run away, which then grew into more sophisticated and esoteric role-playing, where you're not just on a battlefield anymore. You might be negotiating with a vendor at the bazaar over price of a new piece of armor that you wanted to wear the next time you had to face a monster or something, a dragon in a dungeon, as it were, or with the lord of the manor How do you interact with the Lord of the Manor?
You get quests from him. If it's not a barkeeper, you're not going to get paid a lot if you get a quest from the barkeeper to go downstairs and beat up a couple giant rats. Official scenario at the beginning. And you're going to go to the Lord of the Manor so you get more money, more options, things like that.
And the Lord of the Manor is probably aware of tougher challenges as well.
And it's a game where, and it's the premier role-playing game. And we are going to have a couple episodes where we talk about the history of role-playing games and gaming in general, and a breakdown of how it's been seen market-wise and seen in the popular sense by society. But those are long discussions that we have a lot of stuff to cover here in the first place about what we are.
Yeah.
Delving into that stuff could be a little bit tricky, and being as I know way too much about all that stuff. Now, one thing I want to point out is that while AD&D is a role-playing game, what we want to do with our site and our community of practice is focus on gaming in general, not just role-playing games. Now, It's easier to focus on role-playing games than other games from our perspective, because we've been doing it for, how many years have we been doing it for? 37 years. Last time I checked, it was 37 years I've been playing role-playing games primarily as GM. Richard's been close to that. And awesome. So we're really familiar with board games, war games, computer video games. And so we want to cover all of those aspects too. And Richard, you seem to be the acronym expert here. So you want to break down the ADHD acronym?
ADHD stands for Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder. Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder, I probably can't explain what those are as well as you can, but that's what it stands for.
Okay, so let me give you the technical definition of it. Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder is a neurodevelopment disorder that is characterized by difficulty in paying attention, impulsivity. How do you pronounce that?
Impulsivity.
Yeah, that's it. And the inability to pronounce words correctly. And hyperactivity. It's often diagnosed in childhood, but it could also affect adults. Symptoms of ADD include difficulty focusing on tasks, problems with organization and time management, impulsive behaviors, and excessive need for restlessness. Now, ADHD is typically treated with a combination of medication and therapy. Now, the reason we're doing this is ADHD in regards to this plays a big limiting factor in doing things in gaming communities of all types. I suffer from severe ADHD, and I have difficulty in a lot of these areas, which is corrected by medication. And that I have to take on a daily basis, which is really annoying because I'm not a big fan of remembering to take my medication. And all of these things play into problems with board games, role-playing games, computer and video games, war games. Example-wise, I did not get diagnosed until I was 32. And so I grew up, and we'll have several podcasts about those times too, because growing up undiagnosed, gaming played a pivotal role in handling things because it did allow me something to focus on that I had control over. Whereas a lot of things in my life, because of the situation, I didn't have control over. But as an example, it was near impossible for me to finish a game of chess. I was good at it for the first six moves, but after that, it became boring. I became distracted and I just wanted to be done with it. And so my kids do chess and they can sit through a 3-hour game of chess in order to win. And they were doing that in elementary school, 3-hour game of chess. I could maybe manage 20 minutes. Once I was on medications, that changed and I could actually complete a game, but it also showed the impact it can make on board games, war games. And when you're GMing, it's quite a challenge. Your game. You have a tendency, because time management and impulse behavior and the restlessness, you can wind yourself down a rabbit hole focusing on that stuff too much. Same thing with all the games too. So yeah, that's technical definition of ADHD, and that's my personal experience with it.
Yeah.
Well, I do want to put one little note in there that there's a lot of talk out there about ADHD, and there's a new push that adult ADHD is a big thing, and you can get online and do a little tiny survey and get handed ADHD medication. We have a doctor of behavioral health with us who is an expert at ADHD, and she'll come on and talk about some. But honestly, ADHD is overdiagnosed in a lot of people, and part of the reason for that is all those symptoms, everybody has them. Everybody suffers from those at one point or another. Richard.
And to some degree or another.
And sometimes it can be very intense, depending on the thing. Some people get a new video game and they get buried in it and they have no impulse control and they just constantly play it. They have the excessive activity of focusing on it and everything like that.
Yes.
But that doesn't, that, yeah.
I'm not using my name there.
Yeah. Oftentimes back when Civilization first came out, I had to kick Richard out of my house at 2 a.m. because I needed to go to sleep after he had been playing since 7. But that doesn't mean that you have ADHD. It has what I like to call, you have an ADHD moment, which where you experience what somebody who has ADHD does probably at the same intensity. But the problem with people and what people don't understand here, and the reason it's important to get diagnosed with this, is although people have intense, often severe intense moments of ADHD, they usually get a break from it. they get a vacation from it at times. And so Richard couldn't walk away from civilization until Colonization came out and managed to carry on with his life. Whereas somebody with ADHD, unless they're properly treated, has a severe issue recovering. We don't get a break from that unless we have the proper treatment. And it becomes very difficult, stressful, and depressing to live with. So it does give us amazing ability to multitask and things like that. But the downsides are a lot more than people pointed out to be. And that's one reason we're focusing on ADHD primarily, largely because that's one of my main conditions and I'm well experienced with it. But we're going to address other issues too, largely with anxiety and panic attacks, depression, and how it's hard to game. And essentially, we want to look at gaming, game systems, and game environment, as well as the game society and community, and look at how it interacts and is impacted by mental health issues, as well as how cope with those tools that allow you to work within it and how to leverage those things to be benefits and not be areas that actually make you feel bad because you can't deal with them.
Yeah. So not only are we not focusing specifically on that one particular game, AD&D, but we're also not focusing too tightly on ADHD either. We want to be able to apply across back and forth and more broadly to different types of conditions that people might bring to the gaming table. And
it just makes for a really cool title.
Yes, there's the parallelism between AD and ADHD that is literary or something.
And we'll have more details about the history of that type of stuff. But you really want to go over real quick here what we're trying to do with the website, what we're trying to do with the community, what we're trying to do with things. So maybe, Richard, you could tell us a little bit more about the type of people that we're trying to interact with and the type of people who really are considered gamers, because we want to focus on gamers from all areas, not just role-playing games.
Right. Not just role-playing games, and also not just people with diagnosed conditions either, because as we mentioned, everybody has moments. And even if you don't have any moments or haven't ever had one yet, that doesn't mean that your friends don't have conditions that they might need to deal with. People in your group may need your understanding. And so being able to reach out to diagnosed and non-diagnosed alike is valuable for everybody. But then on a different axis, we also want to talk about distinctions between the casual gamer or the hobby gamer, solitary and community gamers, and social gamers. So casual, I think, is probably the majority of the population, as people who are happy to play games from time to time, but maybe don't on a daily basis, like some of us.
Yeah. Are you saying you're a casual gamer?
I would not say that I'm a casual gamer.
Okay. Would you say your wife's a casual gamer?
She is probably not a casual gamer either, although she does go through phases where she's more or less casual. I think we're probably both hobby gamers.
Okay. And what would be a hobby gamer? Because casual gamer is pretty easy to understand.
Yeah. So a hobby gamer is going to put time, effort, and money into games. They will look for the next book release from Wizards of the Coast or one of the other manufacturers. They will spend a significant amount of time preparing for their weekly gaming session, or they will have a time set aside each day to sit down in front of World of Warcraft or some other online game. There's a level of commitment there, like someone who collects coins sets aside time to pull out the magnifying glass and make sure they can see what mint marks are on their pocket change and sort them into folders so that they have a catalog of all the coins that they have. Or stamp collectors, very much the same kind of deal, digging into the fine points of the art on the stamp so that they can see if it's a rare misprint.
Do stamp collectors and coin collectors even exist anymore?
There are a few of us here and there.
Oh, okay. You're one of those too. Okay.
I also go through phases on that as well.
Yeah. Don't we all? That's because you get distracted, especially when it's ADHD. So yeah, you have a person who goes beyond the hobby gamer to like an obsessive gamer situation, which I can honestly say I have been at times. I think I've scaled back to more of a hobby gamer in the years, but as an obsessive gamer where you had to collect every GURPS book that came out and have it on the day it came out, and that was your life playing those games, it's not bad at times. And what has the problem between an obsessive gamer and a hobby gamer is the problem with that control. And most people usually have that sense of control where they don't overspend on their gaming books, or they don't dedicate 2 weeks to a mush multi-user shared hallucination for those people who haven't grown up in the 90s and aren't used to things like that. And forget what happened for 4 days straight because you were involved in the mush and have no idea of anything that happened around you. Other than that, there's a fine line between obsessive dangerous and obsessive functional.
Yeah.
And that's a large chunk of where people in general can find themselves trapped in. Some of it's situational. If you're depressed because you just got dumped by your girlfriend or something bad happened and it's drugged you down, you might find yourself buried into a online game for 2 weeks straight and not recognize anything else. Something you probably should be looked at, but it more of a situational condition than a chemical condition where your brain functions like that. There is a difference. Not to say one's worse than the other, because they're not. They both have the same impact, but they're different types of treatments and there's different recovery states.
And there's different abilities too. If you have an obsessive moment and you're able to pull yourself out of it and get back to your regular life, then that's a different kind of situation.
A couple of the other types of gamers that we want to look at, which pertain specifically what we're talking about, is the idea of a solitary gamer versus a community gamer. Hobby gamers tend to, what would you say would be like as a hobby gamer, Richard, what would you say is your interaction with society, your interaction with the gaming community?
So my experience with the community is more with a particular gaming group of friends that I have gotten to know and meet with regularly. While I may occasionally go to an event at a store or a game convention from time to time, that's not my typical interaction with the community. It's more of a tight-knit group.
Okay. Now, you do participate in some community things, if I remember. You've helped me run several conventions. So
I even volunteered as a volunteer marketing person for a game publisher.
Trying to avoid those name specifics, huh?
Yeah. It is my habit to be vendor neutral, but there are more than one company that does that kind of thing where I might go to a store and check to see if they're having any problems with their distributor, or run events as a marketing tool for the games, or represent the company at a convention. Go ahead.
So as a hobby gamer, you're not a solitary gamer, which is one of the categories I think people fall into. You don't have a problem going out there and meeting people that you don't know in the gaming community. You don't have a problem participating in events with people you don't know, versus some gamers who find it incredibly difficult to talk to anybody outside of their close gaming group or their close group about anything related to gaming.
Yeah, I would say I'm probably not so far gone as to call myself a solitary gamer. Although my wife gives me grief about my phone games from time to time too, so I'm not completely immune to that either.
Phone games are, I think a solitary gamer in my view is not somebody who plays solitary type games, single player games or anything like that. I think it's more somebody who like isolates themselves in their gaming from the general community. You have people out there who keep their gaming isolated to a small group of people that they normally deal with, or sometimes even just to themselves with like single player computer video games, and don't want to play online with people. They don't talk with coworkers about their hobby. They don't talk with people at the game stores about their hobby, even if they go and pick up stuff and everything. This is definitely different than a community gamer who lives at the game store.
Participates in every Magic tournament.
Right. Buried themselves in events, buried themselves in meeting new people constantly. Not a bad thing by any stretch of the imagination. In fact, neither of them are bad. They're just different types of people and different types of gaming who have different desires, different outcomes.
And anything taken to an extreme can be bad. That doesn't mean that the moderate version is necessarily bad.
Yeah, and I think that comes back to the site when we're talking about who we're dealing with and who we're trying, what's our target audience? What's our target audience that we're trying to reach out to? Understanding the differences in what people need, solitary gamers, not as a category, but what aspects of a person who isolates themselves from the gaming community by choice, or in the case of living out in the middle of nowhere, like Richard, not by choice, because you live in the middle of nowhere, you understanding what they need in support, assistance, and how to deal with them in a community of practice. You can see that's a big phrase I'm going to constantly use thanks to my job. They beat it into me. It's not so much we want to classify people in that, but we want to make sure that we're addressing needs of those groups and that we're providing support and things like that. So some of the typical gaming issues we want to talk about and we want to examine and look at ways of helping people out and giving them tools and a community that can support them in these areas are what some of the things that are problems for gamers in when they play games and when they do things with games.
So I think as you and I have talked about this on a number of different occasions, the difference between when we were high school gamers and now that we are adult gamers is that adult gamers have much more complicated schedules. And then if you are playing a game that is multiplayer in any way, shape, or form, then you have others who also have complicated schedules. And now you have to find the commonalities between your different complications to get together and play. And many times in the last several years of my adulthood, I've had game groups that broke apart completely or had all of the players change at some point or another, or a revolving door of players coming in here and there, changing as time goes on, the composition of the group changes. So finding a way to get everybody together is probably the issue that I deal with most frequently anymore. Beyond that, one of the reasons why your composition of your group changes besides scheduling is interpersonal conflict. Like when two players start dating and then break up. That happens. And sometimes it's not a problem and sometimes it is. It all depends on the seriousness of the relationship and et cetera. But then that's probably the conflict that I've had the most experience with.
Shit. Mike, do you have other?
One of the big things with interpersonal conflict that I've seen is just, it's not even the fact that you have Jackass at the table or something like that, who's just disruptive or somebody who's causing problems. Sometimes it's caused by just difference of goals, outcomes, difference of expectations. I've played with several people, and you've played in my games before for years, and realized that I'm more of a story-oriented person. I don't like handing out experience points, largely because I forget to and things like that. So I prefer a game like GURPS, where your characters are fairly static over a period of time and everything. And or something even better, like a basic role-playing Call of Cthulhu, where I'm not responsible for your characteristic increases. Those are dice rolls at the end of the adventures that you make that determine how your character grows and everything. I'm much more story-oriented. But if I have a player who comes from D&D, where they expect level progression, they expect experience points, they expect magic items on consistent basis and a power growth curve, that is regardless of the story, they can be disappointed and they can get frustrated with the game, and because they're not in the right type of game for them. And it's not a conflict between the personalities, it's a conflict between the expectations and the play styles. And this can happen in board games, card games, because you have some people who just are there to play and have fun and don't care about winning in a board game. And you can have people there who are cutthroat at the table. And as long as people understand that Bill across the table is going to do anything to win that game of risk, then that's fine, because everybody can deal with Bill and his risk obsession and still have fun. So you have to be aware of those things. Those are some of the issues that we want to look at. What's another issue that you can think of that we want to look at?
So another one is, if you are in a game where everybody else is hogging the attention of the game master and you hardly ever get to do anything, that's going to become not fun very quickly. So there's over participation, and then there's also someone who is under participating. They're just not that interested. Maybe they are a guest of one of the other players, and balancing out the level of participation that they want with the level of participation that you would like them to have. And that gets back to expectations as well.
And it doesn't have to do with just the actual game session itself. One of the ones that I always have an issue with is rules understanding, where you have players who are like, just tell me what to roll and I'll roll it, because they don't really care about the rules. Or you have those who are hyper detailed on the rule. And as a GM, you can deal with it, you can run with it. But at the same time, if you have multiple people around the table and it takes an hour for two of the characters to design their lightsaber in game and everything, and everybody else is sitting around in the swamp trying to find stuff to do, the GM has to make adjustments for it. This happens with board games too. I don't like card games, but if somebody wants to play card games and that's the only thing I can do, or if I really want to make them happy, I'll play a card game, but it's hard for me to pay attention sometimes. And so I have to really focus on the fact that I need to at least give it a minimal attempt and everything to make sure they're having fun, and trying to find ways for me to have fun as well, either as doing stupid moves that cause me to lose and everything. If you do it the right way, you can have fun. And of course, one of the big things about gaming issues that a lot of people have that probably people aren't aware of is what I like to call the 80-20 rule, 80%/20%, where a game session, a typical game session, board game-wise, role-playing game-wise, even computer-wise, how much of that session is actually spent playing the game, and how much of that session is actually spent mucking around, talking about last week's or what happened with Bill, or why in the heck Frank didn't show up with the chips that he was supposed to, so now nobody has any chips to eat, or the fact that the entire network infrastructure crashed at your work on Monday and you had massive amounts of stress till Thursday, and now you're at your Friday gaming session and you don't even want to be there, but you have to. Are you spending 20% of your time just chit-chatting? Are you spending 80% of your time actually conducting the adventure, actually focusing on the game? Some people don't mind having that breakdown. Some people who get to a game want to focus just on the game. They want to walk in the door with their Subways. These are all real examples. They want to walk in the door with their Subway sandwich at 7 o'clock, and at 7:10, they want to be down playing the game in character. And then they want to wrap it up at 10:30, 11 and walk out the door. They don't want to have a lot of chit chat or anything like that. Other people, and like I said, speaking from experience, can manage to get the first two turns out of a game because they spent 2 hours talking about absolutely nothing and wound up watching 2 episodes of a TV show that they wanted to show to people. So that's a concern about how to handle it. And again, this is a situation much like the experience points or the rules mechanisms. As long as people are aware of the differences of expectations and the differences in outcomes, you can adjust accordingly so that everybody in your friend group can work properly and still have a fun time.
Yeah. And when you're gaming is your main socialization with the rest of the world, then you want to make sure that you've got the proper balance, but it's going to have some aspect of that. What did you do since the last we met? Anything exciting happened in your world? There's a building of friendships and relationships, and that's worth having.
Yeah.
So
I've seen that happen in podcasts where the podcast starts up and there are a bunch of gamers and they'll spend the first 10 minutes talking about what they did last week in their gaming circles and environments before they get to other stuff. And as long as the audience is cool with that, or as long as there's a chapter so I can skip that section, that's fine. But you have to be aware of that.
Yes. And I think we'll probably find a theme running through this is that it's about setting expectations and communicating with the people that you're gaming with.
So because those are the issues, there are specific types of gamers and specific results of conditions that cause further, more than normal issues in those areas that we want to look at. And one of them is anxiety. So let's just be honest. Anxiety plays a big part in people's lives, especially in today's world, due to all sorts of conditions.
So many things to be anxious about these days.
Yeah. And so like we've said before, a lot of what we're talking about, while we're speaking from a space of mental health issues, such as severe anxiety disorder, everybody suffers from anxiety at some point in their life. Everybody suffers from anxiety in specific things. And what we want to do is provide help and assistance for people who don't have things like severe anxiety, but things that they can use and tools and ideas and support for those moments that they do. Going into game stores has always been one of my big ones. I don't have a problem talking to new people. I don't have a problem talking about my hobbies and everything like that. But for some reason, when I go into a game store situation, because of the different levels of experience and because there's such a diverse range of people and personalities and everything, I find it often hard to communicate and have a discussion with gamers in that environment. Let's just be honest, gamers, and largely we are self-focused on our own gaming experiences. How many great gaming stories do you have to tell? And how many great gaming stories do the other people have to tell? How much do they want to listen to your gaming stories? And you can get anxious about how you're behaving in there or how they're going to behave. And it can cause problems in all those areas we talked about. If you're anxious and you're having issues with scheduling, maybe you find it very difficult to show up at specific scheduled times because you're not sure who's going to be there or you're not sure if they're going to meet. And if they're not there, maybe you're going to get
anxious because did the game get canceled? Did you get kicked out of the group? All sorts of things like that might happen. What's another type of specific gamer problem, a problem that a gamer would have that could accentuate those gaming issues we were talking about?
Something that I deal with, not only from my players, but also me as the GM, is a lack of concentration.
No.
I will tell you, even I was a professional technical trainer for a time, and I warned my classes that it was real easy to get me off track, off onto tangents. And I will follow a tangent for a real long time. If I'm not careful, I will waste a lot of time talking about something that isn't really germane to the topic. Like this, for instance, lack of concentration. And that does tie back into that 80-20 rule that we were talking about before, where something will happen in the game or remind me of something cool that happened on a TV show or something that happened to me in my life or a story from my childhood. And so we can skew that percentage quite a bit the wrong direction if I'm not careful. If I'm the one who's the GM and I'm the one that's controlling the narrative, it's up to me to make sure that we don't go off on weird tangents.
Yeah, I know a couple of our games went the 25-75 aspect.
Yes, those are the things. Another thing that I deal with is a lack of planning. I used to obsess over planning. And then when I'd get into the game, all my planning was for naught because the players had their own ideas about how things wanted to go. So I went guardrail to the other direction where I just said, since I'm improvising anyway, I'll just plan to improvise. Which is, if you can do it, that's great. But it's also an anxiety-inducing thing as well. So I've tried to find middle ground where I have notes about things that are going on regardless of what the players do and places where I want them to go and have notes ready so I'm not flipping pages when things come up. And also then I can improvise my way back to my plan because I've got those notes. And that's the kind of thing that we'll talk about, how to deal with things like a lack of planning.
Planning inside the game itself can be very frustrating as well and can cause issues. Like when you're playing Junta and you plan on doing something useful and your wife assassinates you in the first turn, that can be very frustrating and anxious because you don't want to get mad at the person when she assassinates you the second time in the second turn. Again, true stories. Then you get assassinated in the third turn. And they all assassinated me because it was my game and I was good at it. And I knew how to play, which was not true because it was the first time I played it. And I'm horrible at board games. Yeah, a little frustrating on that one. Keeping that stuff in check, you know, when your plans are derailed, when your planning turns out to be a lack of planning because you didn't take that stuff and the possibilities into account. You also have lack of participation. People who just are normally quiet. People who don't interact well with others, who have anxiety and get freaked out when they're put on the spot and everything like that. Those are the type of things that you need to be aware of too, or over participation.
Yeah. And especially if you're, so for instance, when I'm GMing, I want to make sure that I'm not over indulging a particular player. So if I've been interacting with one of the players for several minutes, I want to make sure that I switch focus to somebody else to include them so that they're not sitting over there twiddling their thumbs getting bored. But on the other hand, if I'm putting somebody on the spot, that's not fun either. So
as a player, and I'm not a huge fan of being a player, I find the lack of participation of the other people in the group very frustrating as well. And understanding if a lack of participation is because somebody has anxiety and doesn't want to participate is easier to deal with than understanding that everybody's just letting you decide everything because God knows why. Again, from experience, recent experience, frustrating and everything like that. Now, some of these things that we want to talk about, the gamers, and these are things that specific gamers have problems with, We're not talking, we all know that lack of planning affects the game, but we're talking about a player or a GM who has a lack of planning, or a player in a board game who doesn't plan their moves and just willy-nilly does stuff that impacts everybody in a cooperative game without thinking about it. But some of these things go outside from the game itself into things like financial control. Spending habits are hard to control for certain people. ADHD is an example of somebody who has, those people tend to have a problem, money management and impulse control. And they'll go out and purchase every D&D 5th edition book in one go, despite whether or not it was financially a good decision, just because. And finding ways to help those type of people and deal with those type of people who can be useful, and having a community that supports that can be really important. And we'll want to provide area, especially with the new announcements from Wizards of the Coast and the new AD&D one they're planning on coming out with. And whenever you have the CEO of a company like that say that the biggest problem with the game is that it's under-monetized, leads to, like we've seen with DLCs, like we've seen with loot boxes and video games, companies starting to prey upon people who have that lack of financial control as whales, as they say, and everything. So even outside of the game itself, outside the rules, outside the sessions, we still want to look and support people and help them figure out ways to handle things like that. And like I said, it's not just people with conditions, it's people who at the moment are experiencing similar states of mind. So can you think of any other ones? Any other type of gamers and gamer behaviors?
Well,
that can...
yeah, I'm going to tell a little story from my youth. Again, there was a time back in the 80s when my family was worried about me. My sister was convinced that we were all Satanists and were going to be sacrificing the cat. Or my mom worried that we would lose connection with reality because she was hearing stories in the news about kids who got swords and tried to hack at each other or got lost in the steam tunnels or...
Thank you, Tom Hanks.
...of other things. And I explained to her that it's a game. Mostly we're sitting around a table rolling dice, just like you do in Monopoly. But you don't ever see anybody worrying that their kids are going to go out and start buying up properties and charging outrageous rents. Although some do, maybe not as kids. But,
interesting history on that we can talk about. Monopoly, yeah.
So there is a popular culture concern about people getting quote-unquote lost in the game. But while I think that is something that's overblown, it's also something that could happen. You might have somebody who pours their heart and soul into their character and identifies with them.
And you can see that with wargaming is a perfect example right now with Warhammer 40,000 miniature games, where people will spend and overspend on miniature figures, focus entirely on painting them, and get super obsessed with the rules to the point where they're no fun to play with at times and everything. So it doesn't just affect role-playing games and characters. Despite what the Chick Track says about dark dungeons, nobody's going to, I don't think anybody's going to kill themselves with their elf dying, the Chick Track to say. And Tom Hanks in that Mazes and Monsters movie, I'll constantly berate them for that travesty of creating the entire satanic panic of the 80s in terms of role-playing games, not creating it entirely, but giving it such a platform that it just made all of our lives so hard in the 80s to carry around a player's handbook without getting in fights with people at school because you're evil. I do like how they played that up a little bit in the latest season of Stranger Things and everything, with the outcry about the D&D club.
Yes.
And everything. But yeah, it was much worse than that, really.
Yeah.
And at the time,
I would say
even that, in small towns.
Yeah. What I told my mom is if you have somebody who loses connection to reality from playing a game, they probably had bigger problems. And maybe you should be thanking the game for bringing those problems to light.
Yeah, you should, if anybody wants to understand about the Mazes and Monsters, Tom Hanks issue that happened and the story that was the person was based around, there's a book you should read from the World Ones that explained the kid's life. And the kid was a genius young kid in college way before he should have, with social issues and drug issues and just a lot of issues that had nothing to do with gaming and everything. And in fact, the end results of what happened to the kid had very little to do with the game itself. But again, it's the way society presented it. And we'll do a whole article, we'll do a whole podcast on that because it is really fascinating. And it's really fascinating on how it impacted the mental states of the parents and the impact of the mental states of the people involved with it and everything. I knew one kid who couldn't play role-playing games until the Marvel Superhero role-playing game came out. And then when the Marvel Superhero role-playing game came out, his parents were all cool about it and thought it was the greatest thing for him to do because it was superheroes.
And superheroes are good. And
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So here's a question. How can we help out with this situation? How can we help out people who not only have conditions, but suffer from symptoms, effects of those conditions without having them? Like I said, we all have ADHD moments and they can be just as intense as somebody with severe ADHD. So how can we help those people out, and how do we want to help people out by the site, the podcast, the YouTube videos?
Yeah. I guess the first thing is that we want to make sure that everybody knows that this is not just you. Whatever it is that you're dealing with, there is somebody else out there that's dealing with the exact same thing. We're not alone here. This is our community. And if we can build our own community that focuses on these particular issues to work through together. So one of the things that we've talked about is having chat rooms or Discord channels or whatever the kids are calling it these days to join together to be a community and to help each other out, share our stories of dealing with these issues.
Right.
Providing right. people with examples of, as we've already done in this episode, people that you've dealt with and how you dealt with them, and discussing what effects came of different interventions, which ones seemed to work the best, if they didn't work, why you thought that might be, working together to figure out solutions, or at least interventions isn't the word I want to use. If not solutions, then at least strategies for dealing.
And one thing I want to point out here is the mental health aspect of it, because role-playing games specifically, and gaming in general, of all types, has been used in the mental health community for years, but usually as a therapeutic means. They can get people involved who have anxiety interacting with other people in a way. It can be used to teach people how to control behavior issues or make them more aware of situations like that. And there are several groups out there that provide support and do a lot of good stuff in this area. We'll have shows that we talk about those people as well, but it's not what we want to create here. What we're trying to create here is, again, community of practice, which by definition is basically just a collection of people who share similar interests and similar desired outcomes and things like that. And this is a community for people who have these issues, or like I said, not necessarily have them, but suffer from the momentary symptoms of it, the situational symptoms of it, to have support, share the stories, talk to each other, and learn tools and technique that allow them to work past those moments or past those limitations, to set them up for success in any type of gaming environment, whether it's an online MMO, board game, going to a convention, consistent role-playing campaign or going down to a game store and playing in an adventures league. That's what we want to do. We're not focused on how to use this tool to address a specific issue per se in a therapeutic sense.
Yeah, we're looking for ways to integrate gaming into your life, regardless of whether you've got diagnosable conditions.
Yeah.
And everything. And so like the tools that we want to provide to people going forward is, what are some of the things that are not gaming related that you can use in your sessions or in your events or something on the mental health scale? What mental health techniques can you use that actually help? One of the things that we always did in our gaming groups is we used a song, usually an instrumental of some sort, at the beginning of a session, which worked in conjunction with a meditation technique to set the stage and set the mood for all the players at the game, so that all the players at the game tape have an understanding of the feeling, the emotional direction and everything. Guided meditation with music to get people in the gaming sense. That's something that can be applied to any game, regardless of, but it's a mental health technique that's used consistently and everything. How did it actually work, Richard, when we did that as an example?
So it was fun, for one thing, to it as the theme song, as if, I mean, we were gaming back in the days when TV shows still had theme songs. And at that time, then that was a way to set up a mood. It, to get into the mindset of the what was about to happen. I've been watching old episodes of Quantum Leap, and I just enjoy singing along to the song. It centers me into the milieu really well.
Yeah. And so there's a lot of techniques that people in the mental health profession use to correct these issues or assist in working around things and everything like that. And we want to present some of those, which is why we have an expert in the field involved with us, so that we can actually have, we're not just a bunch of people running around guesstimating at this stuff. We actually have somebody who can actually, you know, who actually knows this stuff and everything and can help us apply it to gaming and everything. We also want to provide tools in regard to designing, planning, and running games of all types. We're going to start with role-playing games for a large chunk of it, because that, again, is where our major expertise lies. And we do have quite a bit of experience with role-playing games over the last 40 years. And both me and Richard have run gaming conventions with a focus on board games, war games, and role-playing games in them. Both of us have run gaming groups. Both of us have been involved with professional companies in terms of beta testing, as well as doing publicity for them, doing sponsored games for them. So it's not like we're not familiar with the gaming world or how games are utilized and impact society. And role-playing games, again, is our major focus, although we are currently working on a card game, of all things, a type of game I don't like, but Jimmy has a brilliant idea, which we will talk about later on, that we might be coming out with. But one of the things about those and providing those things is we want to help people get a good grasp on how they can notice their limitations, they can notice their blockers, and they can tell whether they're situational or if there's something else there that's a larger situation, so that they can determine what's the best course of action, whether they just need to do a little meditation work or something like that, or whether they need to have a real serious talk about somebody examining the situation. And by having a professional involved combined with our experience in the gaming community and everything like that, I feel like our site in our community of practice that we put together is going to be able to assist people in those areas to provide the support and community for people who have those questions and everything. It's another thing, Richard, that we're going to be able to give people and provide people.
We are in the process of developing templates and other tools that will help guide through various different processes in the gaming world. This does focus largely on game DMs or DMs or whatever version of the person in charge your game uses.
But everybody should be a GM. There's not enough out there.
if you are at all inclined to being to playing God with characters, GMing, that's a thing.
Oh, no, don't, because that implies controlling people's characters.
Yeah.
Remember, we're trying to work on creating environments and situations and entertaining people. That's the main, we don't want to control them. We want to entertain them.
Yeah.
When we want to entertain the players, we'll make the character's life hell, but we just want to entertain the players.
Yeah, yeah, I shouldn't have gone that far.
But we'll have podcast episodes or YouTube videos, or we'll figure all that out for sure later as tools, as resources for you to use as you're sitting down and saying, I have to have a game ready. How do I do that? We'll walk you through how we do that. Hints and tricks. We'll have documentation.
Right, documentation, and provide templates and everything from designing a game, if you wanted to design your own game, or if you wanted to modify an existing set of rules to customize what you want to play, to large-scale campaigns, or just simple adventures, or even how to run a game session, templates on how to manage a game session with a pre-made adventure that just makes it easier to use that Sunless Citadel adventure without having to flip through the pages constantly. It's in worksheets on how to do that. But more so, there's a lot of those out there anyway that exist, those templates. And what we want to do is actually show people how to use them effectively via video, via podcasts, via online sessions, via live plays, where we can actually show people those tools in practice, not just the tools, not just provide the tools, but show them in practice, help them out. And we want to expand it out to, like I said, running a game session of a board game, having a party night, even getting maybe into some like programmed game design documentations, writing up a computer game you're working on, things like that. Because although they're out there, sometimes it's difficult for somebody who's in an ADHD moment or who's depressed to actually leverage those tools that exist, not just ours, into a way that it allows them to function and have success at what they want to do, not what they feel like they can do.
Said.
That's why I'm talking on this thing. And of course, by doing all this stuff, we're going to have samples. We're going to have pre-made campaigns that people can use. We're going to have pre-made worlds people can use, all for them to do whatever they want with. But we're going to show them how they were put together. We're going to show them the steps. And we're going to show them the steps to use them effectively without, honestly, because we're older, without spending a lot of time doing it. That's one of the things, the scheduling thing. And I think kids nowadays have the same problem with scheduling and dividing up work and everything. The easier you can make it for people to do what you're trying to do without having to flip through pages, without having to try to remember stuff off the top of your head, anytime you can do stuff like that, it's going to be a benefit to that time and that scheduling and everything. And having stuff pre-created and having an understanding of how to modify it is definitely it. Eventually, we want to be able to take and do like maybe online session seminars, do consulting stuff for people, help people develop stuff themselves specifically. And we do have the community support. We have a Discord channel. We're going to put message board systems away for people to share ideas and stories and everything. And so in the end, Richard, going forward with what we are, and this has been longer than we thought, so I'll probably break it up into two sessions,
yeah,
two podcasts. Maybe I'll provide one for people who want to listen to the whole damn thing at one time, and then another time I'll break it up so that. But so, how's this going to work? What are we doing going on?
So, we're building out our website, playing AD&D with ADHD. I'm not sure that's the exact URL, but if you search, you should be able to find that.
ADND. Now, there's a link, obviously.
We'll put a link in the
podcast. Like somebody's sitting there going, oh, I got to get here right now and typing. There's a link in the title. Anyway.
Yes, we'll publish various samples, et cetera, on the website. You've already found the podcast. So we'll have podcasts available and probably linked from the website as well.
You probably found the podcast from the website.
Probably.
Who knows?
Possibly. Very possibly. We'll be doing live plays on Twitch of role-playing games. We might even do some board games at some point or another.
A lot of board games we want to play out there.
Michael has a list of board games he wants to play before he dies.
Yes. It's like a bucket list of games.
Gaming bucket list, as it were.
Actually, I want to play them to see which games I just need to throw in the bucket. Because I want that kill. Come on. Wabbit Rampage. I played it once. I don't remember, but I want to see whether or not it really was worth keeping Wabbit Rampage. Thank you, Pace.
We'll have a template library. We've talked about the message boards and the Discord channels.
We want to break stuff down into let's do things because we want it to be participatory, not just us talking and things like that, and create a real community practice. So we have a lot of let's do things, like let's play a game, which would be the live stream. Let's design a game, which would be where we take either an existing rule set or make our own rule sets up and design a game. Let's make a campaign. Let's plan a session. And we'll have separate sections of those and everything. So something to keep in mind and consider. And a lot of the templates will tie into that. But when we do those let's plays and when we do the let's stuff, there's also going to be examples that people can lift and use for their own. When we do a let's design a game, the end result's going to be a game that people can take and use themselves. Let's plan a campaign. It's going to be a campaign people can lift and use for themselves, like Greyhawk or Forgotten Realms. Hopefully it's good, maybe not, hacks. But you'll have videos and everything to explain, show how those things are used and everything.
And talk eventually about alternative ways to do things.
Right. And we're currently working on a card game, a social card game, which is educational as well as fun, I think. We're going to be doing playtesting soon for that. So we're going to have a spot people can sign up to do playtesting for it, but we're not going to talk too much about it and everything. And we're looking at starting a Patreon page because a community practice is great, but we really want participation. And Patreon tiers that we set up are going to be like ridiculously low, starting at $1 just to be in the Patreon, which allows you to get into the discussions and it allows you to participate and everything. Because a lot of time people sign up for stuff for free and they just never use it and they never talk on it and they never get any benefit out of it. One of the big things is they say that 70 to 80% of all the self-help books purchased in the United States are never read by the people who purchase them. And they're buying books and still not doing it. So the Patreon, all the content we do, podcast wise, things like that, are going to be free for people to listen to anyway. Some of the more advanced tools we want you to use. So we might put them on a Patreon spot. That's one thing that we want to consider. But if we do tiers in Patreon, which we're talking about, we're going to set up things where like you can participate in online games with us. You can play those games that I want to play before I in Tabletop Simulator. You can play on Roll20, which is really our platform of choice. We're not getting sponsorship from any of these people. I'm just throwing them out there because I don't know when to stop talking. Filter. So I just spit that stuff out. This is the direction to go. These are the things we want to do. And these are the things that we think we can help people out with. And not just us, but generate an entire community where more people participate in this than just me and Richard and everything.
Right.
And so just a breakdown of who we are at the very end before we go. People have an idea. Again, my name is Michael Dorland. I've been playing role-playing games since 1979-1980, and I've played pretty much every game out there. I've done game design. I've tried to do some Kickstarters, but this goes back into the limitations and stop points for ADHD and things like that. I've run several game conventions, done a comic book, and project management is, for some reason, I've managed to do that pretty well in a career field, as well as consulting. I don't know how, but I managed to make a living doing that. So I do have experience in how to organize stuff and plan stuff out, provided it's not something personal and it actually has a level of responsibility, which I'm hoping this website does. Richard, you want to explain a little bit about yourself?
Yes. Richard Dodson, actor and singer with a degree in Spanish and history, which I turned into a career in information technology.
Because that's where you make the money.
Because that's where I made money, which led me to homeless services, where I did database administration for a number of different continuums of care across the country. So if you have any questions about homelessness, I can help you with that. But gaming-wise, I've been playing since, I guess it was about eighth grade, so that would be pretty close to 81, 82, 1900 and 81 or 1982. Thank you very much. I'm not that old. Playing off and on, often as a player, frequently as the game master. I've helped with conventions. I've run demos at games, game stores. And so my experience isn't quite as extensive as Mr. Dorland's here, but I've been doing this a long time and have started to get good at it. And so I'm happy to help.
And the other main participant in this is my wife, Jessica Dorland, who is a fully qualified therapist as well as a doctor of behavioral health. And she'll be providing support and double checking our information to make sure we're not giving out bad advice or incorrect information. So we'll really lean on her to provide expertise in areas outside the gaming realm and everything. And we hopefully will see she'll have time from her practice and her Patreon group to delve into some of these more complicated subjects that are specifically related to conditions of anxiety, depression, ADHD, and everything. We also have several supporting people who are going to participate in the site. They provide articles, overview,
perspectives,
just perspectives and everything. But we also want people in the community to participate as well. And so having open forums, having roundtable discussions is something we'd like to do with people we don't know, people who are interested in joining the discussion, joining the information. We'll have schedules for stuff. There's a schedule for what we normally do, game-wise, Twitch-wise, everything that'll be posted to the website that we're trying to keep on schedule. The overall thing about this, and the real question, is it going to work? Is what we're putting together here going to be useful and valuable? And the real answer is, yeah, it'd be nice. Who knows?
We'll find out.
I have ADHD.
We'll find out.
We'll find out. Richard's here to keep me on track. Richard's here to keep me on track. Jessica's here to keep me accurate. And I'm here to keep people entertained. It's nice to have a guideline of what we're supposed to do. So remember, we do have a website. Anybody is welcome to go to it. You can register on the website so that you can post comments or you can have discussions and participate. There's also a Discord server that you can join, which, of course, we'll want to have some way of not having a bunch of bots join. So I'm looking into that one. But the Discord server has several channels that relate to the things we've been talking about. And we will be launching a Patreon, hopefully soon, which allows even more participation and access to the information that we're creating, because the stuff doesn't come free from our aspect.
Yes.
I had to pay for a microphone for Richard.
The lovely microphone it is, too.
Thank you very much. Makes you sound like a smooth DJ. Yeah. Not that you haven't done that before. Oh, wait, we did do that, didn't we?
We've been there.
At one point in our lives.
That's a story for another time. That's an outro. That's a story for another time.
That's a story for another time. Me and Richard's radio career doing a morning show. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I know this one went a little long, but it was an overview of everything we're doing. Other podcasts and stuff will be broken down much tighter because it is a long slog to listen to the whole thing. I might break this into two parts, so you may be listening to part two now. Who knows?
Or three. We're getting close to, I think we're over 90 minutes now.
Yeah, but you got to remember, we got to cut everything out. So we'll probably come down to about 63 minutes or something. 30 minutes of us just rambling on.
That's probably true.
That we can get rid of. Yeah. Other than that, just pay attention and keep looking for us. We're gonna try to be on a schedule of releasing a couple podcasts or YouTube videos a week. Plus, we'll have the weekly live stream of video games and live Twitch stream of us just playing something and babbling about stuff like we normally do. Schedule will be posted at the website. And I'd like to thank everybody for listening. Do you have anything that you want to say going out, Mr. Dodson?
Yes. Be excellent to each other and party on, dudes.
Man, I hated that movie when it came out. It grew on me after the second one. And I went to the second one just because I wanted to see them die. That was the whole point of it. I hated that first one. Okay. We need to come up with a catchphrase.
That's what I was doing with
that. No, you can't use the Bill and Ted catchphrase.
Okay.
Come up with a better one. What do they say at the end of Quantum Leap?
Oh, boy.
Not that I like. Huh?
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
Every time he leaps, once he realizes what his situation is, he says, oh, boy.
What's that? Do you watch that show? What's that? Illegal Alien show on NBC?
Oh, no.
I don't remember what it's called. There's an outline he does on half the episodes. That's such bullshit. That would be cool. Anyway, maybe we'll splice something in at the end. Okay, here's the closing credits, because I know we're making an outro and an intro. So we'll just go, here's the closing credits. We'll talk to you later. Say bye.
Bye.
Richard. That's not how you're supposed to do it, Gracie.
Bye, Richard.
Okay.